Good morning. It obviously brings back a flood of memories for me to be standing here. It was 30 years ago, as hard as that is to believe, about this time of year when I remember having a lot of mixed emotions. My club had just won Sing Song, something we had never done before, and that was exciting. But I was a senior with absolutely no clue what was going to happen when I graduated in just a couple of months. I knew I wanted to be in ministry, but I didn't know what kind of ministry, and I didn't know where. And I had no idea that within a few months, I would be the preaching minister at this church, which at that time I couldn't have found. I didn't know where it was or that it even existed. This room didn't exist 30 years ago. A crowd like this would have taken us three services in the old auditorium. I have no clue why you people hired me. I was 21 years old. I had no wife. I had no dates. I had no sermons. I had no clue. Since then, I have found a wife. And we're doing well. Jamie and I will be married 27 years this coming June. I've now been married over half my life, as hard as it is for some of you to believe. And she'll be here at the second service. And at least that part of my life is going really, really well. In fact, just to give you an example, this last Thursday for Valentine's, we're sitting at the breakfast table. And she says, "Honey, I had the strangest dream last night. I dreamed that for Valentine's Day, you were going to give me some diamond earrings." She says, "What do you think that dream could mean?" And I winked at her. I said, "Honey, I think we'll find out tonight." So I took her out to this nice restaurant, and I put this little box that I'd wrapped real carefully and slid it across the table, and she opened it up, and inside was this book, How to Interpret Your Dreams. And Jamie was so overcome with emotion, she hasn't been able to speak since. At least not to me. But we're doing good. And I know that she's excited about being here a little later and seeing some of you again. Another thing is going to make some of you feel old. That since the last time I stood in this pulpit, I've turned over 50. I'm over 50 years old now. How about that? So some of you got to really be old. Because you were old when you hired me. Life changes when you're 50. A lot of changes. Man, when you guys hired me and I was 21, when in my 20s, I could have played basketball all night long. Just got up the next day and went. In my 30s, I could play basketball all night long, but I'd get up the next day and I'd be sore. I learned in my 40s, I'd get up in the morning and I was sore and I didn't do anything last night. But now I'm 50, it's no problem because I can't go to sleep anyway. And so one of the things that happens when you get older is there's always this risk of your muscles atrophying. So I'm going to give a tip to all of you getting about my age, something you can do to stay strong because it's working for me. I started it about 5 or 6 months ago. You grab 5-pound potato sacks. You put one in each hand and you hold them out like this and see if you can hold them for a minute. And after I could do that for about a week or two, I went up to 10-pound potato sacks. And got to where I could hold them up for a minute. Then I got up to 25-pound sacks. Now, by December, I was holding up 50-pound potato sacks in each arm for over a minute. Now, next week, I put a potato in each sack, and we're going to go from there. Because I do want to get stronger in my body. But I got a greater goal, a much greater goal for my life this year, this leap year. I want to grow stronger in my faith. Building muscle's a good thing. It'll have a temporary but tangible benefit. Building faith's a great thing. It'll have an eternal consequence. My resolution this year is to grow in faith. And so what I want to do before we start is show you a clip of a movie, one of the greatest scenes Hollywood ever produced. It illustrates what we're talking about today. And if you don't immediately recognize what movie this is from when it starts, you just go ahead and repent, and we'll explain it when it's through. So let's watch this clip for just a second. I read in Reader's Digest a story of a guy that was getting recruited for the Army, and he was entering jump school. And he said, the recruiter said to him, it's a 3-week program. And the guy said, well, tell me what's going to happen. He said, well, in the first week, we're going to separate the men from the boys. And in the second week, we're going to separate the men from the fools. He said, what happens the third week? He said, the third week, the fools jump. How many of you are wired to be risk takers? Just hold up your hand if you are. You wired to be a risk taker? How many of you think it's just too risky to hold up your hand in church? That's what I thought. Preaching to a room of cowards. Okay. Why do you think even Hollywood calls it a leap of faith? A leap of faith. Let me explain why. Because a sure faith didn't become so by waiting for a sure thing. A sure faith doesn't become so by waiting for sure things. Now, I've heard it said there's no atheist in foxholes. I would contend there's no true believers in bomb shelters. Jesus said, I will promise many things to those who follow me, but never once does He promise safety. You check me on that. He called potential disciples to embrace risk and trust Him. He had this ability to look right in your heart and tell what it was that was where your security was placed and ask for it. Like that rich young ruler who came to Him one day and Jesus said, just sell your stuff. Get rid of it. Embrace the challenge. Embrace the adventure. Embrace the risk and follow me and you'll find life like you've never been able to find it in a mall. But sadly today, I believe discipleship has become so sanitized and domesticated in most churches that embracing risk is no longer necessary. Now I'll say that again. I believe discipleship as it's preached and practiced and advocated in most churches has become so domesticated that risk is no longer a part of the invitation. I think Tony Campolo was right when he said, most of us live life as if we were trying to arrive at death as safely as possible. Let me show you another picture of this magnificent beast in Africa called the impala. This creature can jump over 10 feet high. It can jump 30 feet long. And you can put it in a zoo behind a 3-foot wall and it'll stay there. Because the impala can't embrace risk. It can't jump unless it sees where it's going to land before it leaps. Again, Campolo says, most of us are praying, Lord, if I die before I wake, we ought to be praying, Lord, wake me up before I die. Fools jump. And we were called to be fools for Christ. I know already some of you are thinking, now preacher, I believe life should be balanced. Would you please show me in the Bible where you hear that? I hear churches saying it all the time. We're just a balanced church. Somebody show me in the Bible where life was called to be balanced. Was that woman in the temple balanced who only had 2 coins left and she put them in the treasury and gave them to God? Did Jesus stop her saying, no, wait a second, sister, you've got to be balanced? Was Mary balanced when she took her life savings in that jar of perfume and tore the top off and poured it all over on the head of Jesus? In that story, it was Judas who was calling for balance, not Jesus. I suspect what a lot of us call balance, Jesus calls being lukewarm. Do you want to develop greater faith? Hudson Taylor, great missionary to China, was right. Unless there's an element of risk in our exploits for God, there's no need for faith. You've got to be willing to take a leap. So let me share with you this morning 4 principles. I came up with a little acrostic on the word leap. And here's the first. It's the leave principle. You can't have a growing faith unless you have a shrinking comfort zone. And that's what we learned in the Bible's example. The foremost example in the Bible of faith was Abraham. And that's the first thing we learn about him. Look at that call, Genesis 12. The Lord told Abraham, leave your country, your relatives, your father's house, and go to the land I will show you. Hebrews 11:8 comments on that verse. It says, it was by faith Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land, God would give him as his inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. This is the call of God. Always. Not maybe, not sometimes. Always. The call of God is to abandon false securities and embrace new possibilities. You can't know God and stay safe. As I said, I think once in a few years ago in a sermon here, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. You can't grow in faith without facing your fear. There was a great story I read in a magazine several years ago about a tremendous storm off the coast of New England. And a ship out there was in trouble and big waves, and they SOS'd for help. And it came to the Coast Guard. And some young sailor said to his captain, "Sir, we can't go out in this storm. We won't get back." And the captain said, "Son, we have to go out. We don't have to come back. You have to go. To know God, you have to go. You don't have to know where you're going to go. You don't have to know if it's going to be easy to go. You don't have to know what's going to happen if you go. But you have to go." And I got thinking about that for most of the people I know and preach to. What does it mean to go? If God is going to call you to leave something this year, what would it be? Now, for some of you, you know exactly, because you're living outside the will of God. There's something in your life that you know is sin and wrong and immoral, and it grieves God, and you know what that is, and you know you've got to leave it. But here's the problem. For most of us, the problem's not that we're doing stuff that's evil. The problem is we're too nice and too comfortable. And what God's going to call you to leave is comfort. What would that be? Faith isn't knowing where you're going. Faith is knowing the one who's told you to go. L is the leave principle. E is the expect principle. The skydiver leaps because he expects his chute to open up. The believer leaps because he expects God to show up. That God loves to display His greatness on behalf of His children. He is a great God, as we sang a moment ago. But here is our problem. Very rarely do we put God in a context where He can display His magnificence, because we want the sure thing. So the 12 tribes are on the border of Canaan, and the spies go in, and two come back and say, "Let's go take this land. God's on our side." And 10 say, "We can't do that. There's a big, mean bunch of people in that land, and they don't look like they want to leave." And so for 40 years, they got what many of us have settled for: barrenness. And Saul's up there on the mountain with his army, and I think any one of those soldiers could have gotten down there and taken on Goliath. But they played it safe. And once again, God was denied the opportunity to put His spectacularness on display. Let me ask you a question. How are you ever going to grow in your faith if you never put yourself in a context where it matters whether or not God shows up? I mentioned Hudson Taylor on his way to China. He's on this boat and he's in his cabin, and there's a knock on the door, and the captain comes and says, "Mr. Taylor, there's no wind. This boat's adrift. We're heading toward an island reported to have cannibals." Taylor says, "What do you want me to do?" Captain said, "Sir, we've heard you're a man of prayer. We need you to pray." Taylor said, "I will pray, but set the sails." Captain said, "There's no wind." "What? Set the sails?" He said, "The boys will think I'm crazy." "Set the sails." And so they set the sails. 45 minutes, the captain came back. Taylor is on his knees in his room, and he said, "Sir, you can stop praying. We've got all the wind. We know what to do with it." Look at Hebrews 11:1 with me. What is faith? It's a confident assurance what we hope for is going to happen. We grow up when we act like God's going to show up. The expect principle. A stands for the attempt principle. If you want to grow in faith, stop standing on the sidelines pointing out what everybody else is doing wrong. Get in the game. I will tell you why most unchurched people have a low view of us. It's because all they hear about us is what we don't do. And we have got to stop defining faith by what we don't do. They don't do that in the Bible. James 2 verse 19 says, show me how anyone can have faith without actions. And so you read on later in that chapter, what does faith look like? It is Abraham embracing the risk of putting his only son up on an altar because God asked for him. It's Rahab risking her own life to hide two spies because she believes this God she's never seen is greater than the gods she's worshipped all her life. Let me show you another picture. Most of you recognize this guy, Brett Favre. Had an incredible year this last year in the NFL. Last September, he set a record. He passed Dan Marino. He's now thrown more touchdown passes than any quarterback who's ever played in the National Football League. He got a lot of fanfare. Ironically, 2 weeks later, he set another record that didn't get nearly as much attention. On that day, he threw an interception. He's now thrown more interceptions than any quarterback in the history of the National Football League. Did you know there's a correlation? If you're afraid something might go wrong if you throw the ball, you never score a touchdown. If you're afraid you might strike out, you never hit a home run. In Hebrews chapter 11, Noah built this boat and Moses stood up to Pharaoh and David stood up to Goliath. They embraced risk after risk after risk. And the funny thing is, we don't call Hebrews 11 the risk chapter. We call it the faith chapter. And I weary of all these Christians who sit around doing nothing and because they've got a stock line. Oh, I'm just waiting on the Lord to open a door. Maybe the Lord's waiting on you to knock on some doors. Don't confuse waiting on the Lord with staying where it's safe. There comes a time when you have to jump. Which leads to the hardest principle of all. I call it the perhaps principle. People of great faith only need a mission and an opportunity. They don't need a guarantee of success. One of my favorite stories in the Old Testament is little known. It's in 1 Samuel 14. And Saul is doing what Saul is good at doing. Nothing. He's up on a hill. The Philistines are oppressing the people. Samuel the prophet has already said back in chapter 4 that God wants the Philistines gone. We're not wondering here what the will of God is. We're wondering why the king won't do anything. So his son Jonathan can't take it anymore. So he says to his armor bearer, let's go make something happen. And I want you to look at verse 6. He says, let's go across to see those pagans. Perhaps the Lord will help us. For nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few. Notice Jonathan took a leap because he believed what he was doing was honoring God. He knew he was moving in line with the purposes of God. What he didn't know is whether or not such movement would come at great personal risk. He knew God wanted the Philistines gone. He knew what God wanted done. He knew the mission of God. What he didn't know is if it would cost him his life to go try to see it done. But it didn't stop him. One of the greatest joys I had the many years I preached here was seeing faith come alive in college students. One of the greatest sadnesses I had in the many years I preached here is to see how many times churches almost systemically were programmed to extinguish that flame. I remember particularly one young boy that come to hear me preach every week. He was a business major, but he sat out there and you could just see faith growing in his heart. He got so on fire for the Lord. He just came up to me one day. He said, Rick, I hear the call of God, and he wanted to go be a missionary. And he went back to Dallas to tell his parents what God had put on his heart. And they came unglued. And they made it very clear, we didn't send you off to ACU to get some nutty idea to go be a missionary. We raised you in a nice proper church. We sent you to a nice school to get a proper education. Go marry a fine little Christian girl. Get yourself back to Dallas. Get you a high paying job. Join the country club. Come to church with us on Sunday and we'll all go to brunch. That's what we sent you to do. And that's what he did. That's what dozens and dozens of them did. I saw him the other day. He goes to a nice, bored little church. He's a nice, bored little Christian. And that flame is almost gone. And I don't have many years left to preach, but God is my witness. I promise you, I am not going to protect people from Jesus anymore. We are following a man who had a cross on his back and who called you and me to leave everything and do whatever it took to accomplish the mission he gave his life for. And we are protecting people from that instead of rejoicing when they want to embrace it. I can't speak to you, but I'd rather fail attempted to do something great for God than succeed at doing nothing. What matters is knowing you pursued God, and He can write the chapter and the end of the story however He wants. That's living by faith. I came across a little poem a while back that reminded me of, sadly, of too many people I've seen in my life. It goes like this. There was a very cautious man who never laughed or played. He never risked. He never tried. He never sang or prayed. And when one day he passed away, his insurance was denied. For since he never really lived, they claimed he never died. It is not true for a preacher to tell you that being in the will of God's the safest place you can be. Jesus was in the heart of the will of God and got him killed. What is true is that you'll never be more alive than when you know you are out on the edge and only God and His realness can sustain. And you'll never be more dangerous to the enemy. This year, God's calling all of us to take a leap. What would that look like for you? Well, I tell you what. Why don't we ask God? Bow your head, please. And I'm going to ask you to pray a prayer. I want you to ask God this question. Dear God, if my faith was going to grow, and if you were going to ask me to jump, what would that be? And stay there before God until you get an answer.